It's been 5 days since the United States began its airstrikes against the Islamic State movement, also known as ISIS, in Iraq, in an attempt to help Kurds and others under assault by the group. The strikes have been highly targeted. The chance of the U.S. entering the conflict on the ground appears highly unlikely at this point.
Meanwhile, in Baghdad, Iraqi prime minister is in the early stages of forming a new government, and without a unified government, it will be difficult for Iraq to launch the kind of offensive needed to push ISIS out of the country. RAND Corporation political scientist and counterterrorism expert Patrick Johnston says that in the meantime, important steps should be taken to cut off ISIS's cash flow. He wrote an op-ed in the New York Times today called Hitting ISIS Where It Hurts. Patrick, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of attention right now is focused on efforts to aid religious minorities in Iraq in the north who are traveling to Kurdistan to escape ISIS. What do we know about their situation right now?
The situation is pretty dire, and this is why the president is considering a limited intervention that would involve U.S. Special Operations Forces or possibly British Special Operations Forces to mount essentially a hostage rescue mission that wouldn't be a reinvasion of Iraq, but instead it would be focused on opening up the roads in and out of the area where the hostages are being held on Mount Sinjar.
And journalists are commenting on the large numbers of women and children and older people. So once they reach Kurdistan, how safe are they?
So they're less safe than they were even, say, 2 weeks ago. And the reason why is because the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, has expanded its control into those areas. And so over the weekend, ISIS expanded into Kurdistan and has been threatening Erbil, the kind of main center of Kurdistan, and then has managed to form basically the kind of foundations of an Islamic State in those areas where it seeks to impose control. So a top priority for the United States, along with protecting the Kurdish people, is to essentially push ISIS back out of those parts of Kurdistan and back into the areas it had previously controlled in northern Iraq.
How successful would you say that the airstrikes have been so far?
So far, the airstrikes appear to have had some success. There were reports of some top ISIS leaders being killed in the airstrikes. But I think the more important kind of thing that the airstrikes do is to limit the freedom of movement that ISIS has. So when ISIS was facing effectively no serious resistance from Iraqi security forces under the Maliki government and the Kurdish militia were, which have historically had fairly good capabilities for self-defense and also for offensive operations, but they had also been overwhelmed. And so the airstrikes have helped limit the freedom of movement that ISIS has to essentially deploy its fighters sort of in places and times of its choosing. And this helps the other security forces, both the Iraqis and the Kurds, to regroup and to be able to try to reclaim those areas that ISIS is now controlling.
Well, let's talk about the Iraqi government. Now, the U.S. wants Iraq to establish a new cabinet. Prime Minister al-Maliki has been resistant. And as far as the U.S. is concerned, what is the goal for a new Iraqi government?
The goal for a new Iraqi government is I think, one that is more inclusive. So a lot of the problems that Iraq is now facing with the humanitarian crisis, the resurgence of ISIS, the sectarian politics, much of that has its roots in kind of the development of the Maliki government, so a Shia-dominated government that was really exclusionary after particularly after the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq in 2012, but even there were some kind of signs of this before then, of the Maliki government playing favorites with the Shia in the country, not keeping promises that it had made to the Sunni tribes that had revolted against at the time it was called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is ISIS is the new incarnation of. And so a more inclusive government in Baghdad would stem, I think, or kind of stop some of the sectarian politics, which are driving more Sunnis who were formerly enemies of ISIS, who have since become essentially allies of ISIS in this war against the Maliki government because they've been excluded from Iraqi politics, to essentially form a government that will help turn all of those parties against ISIS and then stem the security threat and hopefully build a more sustainable, inclusive Iraq.
So let's say that we have this new inclusive government in the 30 days that the U.S. wants it in. What are the first actions that should be taken?
Well, the first actions that should be taken are, I think, security sector reform. And what I mean by that is specifically actions that will help kind of build on some of the training and equipment that the U.S. provided before it withdrew from Iraq to the Iraqi security forces. There was an extensive U.S. Mission and kind of component to the war that wasn't really war fighting, but it was essentially preparing Iraqi security forces to be able to stand up and clear, hold, and build sort of the counterinsurgency mantra, but to be able to do this on their own when the U.S. would no longer be there. That much has failed so far, and the reason why, I think many people in Washington think is because of this sort of political dynamic that has kind of ripped the country apart at the seams, and that's included the security services. So reforming the security services would ideally, put Sunnis, Shias next to each other in a balance that would be effective against ISIS, which is still really an existential threat to the Iraqi government, to the Syrian government next door, possibly to other governments in the region. And down the road, it's not impossible that it could be a threat to the U.S. homeland. So I think that's the first goal. And the administration has purposefully set political reform in front of kind of security sector reform, and or a direct intervention by U.S. forces, because without a political solution, a military solution or victory would be short-lived over ISIS, no matter how many fighters were captured or killed, so on. The group is very resilient, and there has to be kind of a unified front that would fight against them, that would include both Shia, Sunnis, and as well as Kurds in the north.
Well, with U.S. ground involvement on the ground sort of off the table as far as United States goes, you think we should be looking at the financial standpoint. So what can the U.S. do to choke off the funding for ISIS?
So the U.S. could do a few things, and I think that this is a particularly important issue and possible policy option for the U.S., given that it's committed not to commit troops to go and conduct combat operations in Iraq. And so essentially what this would look like would be deployment of civilian advisors from a variety of U.S. government agencies, including, I think, Treasury, the FBI, perhaps, and other government agencies who were deployed to Iraq during the U.S. period of the war and developed fairly sophisticated law enforcement and investigative capabilities, essentially to collect financial intelligence that would help first, I think, paint kind of an intelligence picture of ISIS and where its money is coming from, right? It's the richest terrorist group in the world now.
Oh, where is its money coming from?
So the money comes primarily from internal sources and primarily from local economies in the north of the country, particularly in and around the city of Mosul. And so it's a different model from other terrorist groups that the U.S. government has been more familiar with and has expended a lot more attention and energy countering, like Al-Qaeda, for example, which drew most of its money prior to 9/11 from from, you know, Gulf state donors, wealthy Saudis, Qataris, and allegedly from some governments as well. So ISIS is different, and it's established more of kind of a mafia state in the north and around Mosul. And so to counter ISIS, the strategy requires a very localized, granular picture of what their network looks like, not just in terms of how it conducts attacks and what its political ambitions are, but how it interfaces with local business owners and extorts essentially protection money in its protection rackets, its control of the oil fields, or its intimidation of the oil sector essentially, and extraction of revenue that way, and so it's a different model and playbook that's necessary to stop essentially the flow of money that's coming into ISIS, which is funding so many of its attacks, and we really see that through actually past research that I and other RAND colleagues have done, is very closely linked to, you know, the money and the attacks are very closely linked. And so reducing the amount of money that the group has should kind of commensurately reduce its ability to conduct attacks and to, you know, keep conducting the kind of grisly operations that it's been conducting so successfully to take large swaths of northern Iraq.
And we've got to leave it there. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Patrick Johnston, counterterrorism expert at the RAND Corporation, about the current U.S. campaign against ISIS in Iraq.